Okay. We will call the meeting to order. It is 7:03 on April 11th, 2019. Meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. Calling the roll. Commissioner Reno Ogden.
Present.
Commissioner Dowling.
Present.
Chairman Franek.
Here.
Commissioner Graham White.
Here.
Absent are Commissioners Pritz, Prestis, and that's it.
But we
do have a quorum. Yeah. And so I guess we can start with that announcement. I'm not sure if we've talked about that with the rest of the commission. Mm-hmm. So Al's term is would have expired in April, and he's decided not to renew that with the commission. So he'll be thanked for his time, but mm-hmm. will no longer serve on the HPC.
We thank him for his service.
Absolutely.
And his ideas and his videos.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Excellent. More to follow on that.
Public testimony.
Hey, Jan Sager, 435 William. The house walk for May 5th, the Historical Society Tales, Our Houses Tell, will be Sunday afternoon. And I believe it's the interiors. I was asked to be a docent, but there seems to be some confusion that we'll find out for sure. Usually it's the interiors. And then we got a firm date on the sidewalk tour. This will be the first time we've done the sidewalk tour. And that will definitely be exteriors, the one on Thatcher and Edgewood Place. So it'll be July 13th, which is a Saturday. And usually it's starts 1 to 2, and then about an hour and a half. So that will be, but more to come, because all they're going to do is announce it in the newsletter. And I think that was it.
Okay.
Thanks.
I'm Bill McDonald, 803 Bonnie Gray. I just merely want to commend the commissioners for a very fair and judicious decision on 11/23 at the last meeting which I attended. So you were faced with a tough situation, and I think dealt with it very reasonably and fairly. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thanks for your input. Seeing no one else, let's move on to the approval of meeting minutes. January 24th, are there any comments? Looks good. I hear a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of January 24th.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes of March 14th. Are there any comments? And I have two. On page 4, 5th paragraph, beginning with the village attorney,
mm-hmm.
talks about evaluating historical significance. Probably should be architectural and or historical, I'm thinking. Similarly, on page 5, same comment in the second paragraph. Those are the only comments that I have. Does anyone have any comments? Any other comments?
I do not.
Then the motion could just be as amended if there's no other changes.
Okay. Okay, I'll get one to make a motion.
Yeah, take your time.
Oh.
All right, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of March 14th as amended.
Second.
I'll second.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Discussion of additional ways to protect significant properties.
Can I make one comment and then a question?
Sure.
I thought that the meeting was handled extremely well. Again, we had a very difficult decision. And I thought that your presentation, and the attorney's presentation was, you know, very, very good. You sent that letter from a neighbor. She was...
Subsequently.
And I questioned whether she understood and whether... And I'm not sure when people come to the public hearings that they all necessarily understand that while we are the Historic Preservation Commission, that we are very limited in what we can do, that we are limited by being able to delay the demolition, but we cannot prohibit it.
Unless it's a village landmark.
Unless it's a village, right, which is different. And that whenever we do have a public meeting or hearing, and that there are a number of the public there with questions and comments, that Dave or John, you know, reiterate the fact that we cannot forbid the demolition.
Yeah, I think one of the things that happens is someone who professionally dealt with real estate for eons, I think a lot of people are sort of familiar with some of the concepts, but I think they have a tendency to merge some of the concepts.
Mm-hmm.
I know that one of the difficulties that I had when we were going through the issues and concerns relative to the Velas Mars Mansion is that some of the reports in the print media were edited in such a way as to be inaccurate, because perhaps whomever was performing the editorial services felt that using the same words and phrases in successive paragraphs was overly repetitive, rather than the fact that that's the precise legal terms and considerations that we were looking at and presented with. And that's one of the things that I know I and others have taken great pains to make certain that what we are doing when we talk about this is to, at the beginning, define the ground rules, what the roadmap is. So the people who have an interest, and we welcome that interest, but perhaps don't have an innate familiarity or haven't been following it with the intensity, obviously, that we do as members of the commission, have a sense as to really, at the end of the day, what we can do, what we can't do, what we're talking about, what we're not talking about. I think when it came time to 1123, I think the biggest concern was the fact that all of the vast majority of comments in support of the applicant's position spoke to the physical deterioration, which is not something that's our purview per the village attorney, unless someone brings up the concept of a hardship. Although, admittedly, that is kind of the 600-pound gorilla in the room, and I think we would be well served, the commission would be well served, and most importantly, the citizens in River Forest and the community as a whole would be well served if the next time we visit amendments to the ordinance, we clarify that so that people understand what we can do, what we can't do, and why.
That brings me to my question to John. What role does the village have, or what can they legally do to prevent a property from disintegrating to the point that 1123 Franklin was? And I know that, if I'm right, there have been at least two properties in the past, I don't know, I'm going to say dozen years, where I think the village did take action. And one was on Lathrop, where a developer had torn the property down and it was a health hazard beside anything else because the rain had filled up and the mosquitoes and everything. And the other was the property on Washington, which had the fire.
That might have been before my time. I don't know that one. Yes, it's not quite my wheelhouse, but I'll speak to the best I can.
So what can the village do when the neighbors complain where, I don't know, there's so many violations to either get somebody to repair it or to, I hate to even say, take eminent domain.
Oh, understood.
Whatever.
So, I mean, the obviously the first and foremost thing that is done here is local ordinance violations, right? That's code tickets. You know, that's the first tool in the toolbox, if you will, right? And that had been going on for some time at that property. I think one of the unique things that Dave and I have talked about a little bit and is part of this case here is that in this case the local ordinance violations were for very much exterior parts of the property, specifically. You walked by that property and it looked like it had been uncared for, right? And that's what many of the calls were about. And the tickets were eventually issued on facade unkept, essentially. Use a coat of paint, that type of a thing. You know that, and not caring for the landscaping, essentially not cutting your grass. You know, so those were ultimately the ordinances that were leaned into there. Those ran for some time, accumulated over time, and eventually those run with the property. So before it can be sold, the bank can be sold, that's what's taken care of. Now, I know that doesn't totally address the inside of the property, which I know has been some concern, and so we've had a little bit of conversation about that, but the village it needs a warrant and whatnot to get on the property as well. So. Anyways, in abstract, I hope that answers some of your question. Beyond that, certainly there's some instances where those ordinance violations are elevated to the court system and pressed through that way as well.
Can I ask another question? Because
yeah.
I think part of the problem was somebody came in. I don't know if they had planned on actually, redoing it and then living there or what. But I'm thinking of two instances, 1123, where somebody came in, tore everything out, and then basically abandoned it. And that was a significant property. But I'm also, and I think that happened before the ordinance, probably.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. Yeah. The other one was a not significant property on the corner of the block I live in. Actually, I think the address was either 700 or 701 Park. Somebody came in, bought it to rehab, got in too deep, it was either too expensive or it was more work than this guy had anticipated, bought it for his family, and abandoned it. Now eventually the owners of the property next door bought it, tore it down, and now use it as, for themselves as a play area. Nice 50 by 200 foot play area, which is good, but it's right on the corner. And I don't know what the village can do in those instances, and I'm not even sure whether these people had the right permits or everything to do, because I know there are other instances where people do not have the permits
to do the work originally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that. I mean, the permitting issue is kind of a separate one,
yeah.
But we try to enforce that the best we can through code ordinance as well. To be honest, especially in instances with interiors, a lot of that stuff comes from neighbor complaints. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's where a lot of that stuff is generated. Certainly, exterior facing things like, somebody hasn't cut their lawn in a year. That's something, an officer can see from driving down the street. But some of the other things, from the interior, come through neighbor complaints and things of that nature.
I mean, I would think the only time that we would get concerned with what happens on the interior is to the extent that it impacts structural integrity in a way that manifests itself on the exterior, because we don't have anything to do with the inside.
Right.
Candidly, I don't think we want to.
But it does affect the exterior.
Right.
with that.
Yeah, to the extent that it does.
And very often it's the combination of both.
Yeah. Back to your question, which is a great question, Carla, but you all lumped it in with like 1123. We're not allowed to get inside 1123.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures I saw, it's a Burnerville project, solid as a rock. There were no, the existing garage had some cracks. The house itself was in great shape. A few things on the porch's exterior in bad shape. So I don't want to hear that comment of, well, like, it wasn't like 1123. There were some other ulterior motives,
mm-hmm.
from my perspective, why it's come down.
I think as to the first home you had mentioned, Carla, if I remember correctly, I think the ordinance was enacted in 2007, but it certainly wasn't amended until later, and the amendment made a number of changes, so it's possible that the someone stopping their work was probably post enactment of the ordinance, but before it was amended, and I would think in all likelihood before there was any real track record of working with it to understand,
yeah.
how the various,
yeah, well, in the list was things. 2013, right? So it's kind of,
yeah.
like the modern era of, you know,
right.
of the ordinance that way.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure exactly when that project started through the gut, but I believe it was around that time.
Yeah, because I know that the homeowner applicant said that it was abandoned in 2008, I believe.
It sounds, it's,
so.
That sounds right.
Okay. Discussion of additional ways to protect significant properties. There have been a number of requests to start a dialogue with the local board of realtors, and to that end, as a former member,
yes.
I'd like to ask Owen to sort of come up with some ideas for our next meeting, or failing that, the meeting thereafter, as to ways to sort of initiate and expand that dialogue. I think one of the challenges we may face is that the seemingly listings for significant properties are clustered within a handful of realtors whom I would feel confident saying are probably quite familiar with the ordinance. I think there are sort of another sphere of folks, of realtors, perhaps are members of the local board, who might not necessarily have listings of significant properties to any great extent, but also would have are periodically engaged and periodically interface with significant properties. And then, of course, there are the folks who just have an Illinois realtor's license and happen to come into the area for the occasional deal. And I think those folks potentially would pose a greater concern in terms of trying to find out the outreaches. But I think if we could do something with the first two groups, I think that's pretty much all we can reasonably expect to cover. The folks that do it all the time, I think they already know, but also the folks that are members of the local board and, you know, may tangentially deal with a significant property from time to time.
There's also due diligence on the part of the idea of the design build company,
yeah.
the contractor or the architect. They're certainly liable for lawsuits that they represent. Yeah, we can tear this house down and build a new one. But in fact, the ordinance says you can't do that. They're misleading their claim.
Yeah, I can't specifically offer a thought as to the litigation prospects and liabilities. But as someone who was a practicing attorney for a number of decades, found my bread and butter by representing developers. I know that the first order of business is a very deep dive of due diligence as to the property, both its physical characteristics and also the legal characteristics it's subject to locally. So when I hear from time to time that someone is in the business but wasn't aware, I find that unusual.
That's something, Carlos, you asked John about it, and you've addressed this in the past too, Dave, that these projects get sent to a bank that doesn't have something business, they don't care about it.
Yeah.
Who enforces and who makes the penalties for bad upkeep on a house, and can those be strengthened from the village's point of view to make that a little more serious?
Yeah, so I don't want to speak out of turn. The first part of the question, the answer is that on the local level, there's an adjudication process, and there's a judge that makes that ruling. So that's just the process here. Obviously, if it goes into the county's court system, there's the judges there. To answer your other question, the max cap for local ordinance violations is $750 per violation per day. And so that's often what happens. And again, speaking candidly, usually how those things go is that it tallies up to some huge number over a long period of time, and some amount is eventually settled on and reached. That's usually how the judge rules on those things. So, I wish I could answer more. That's my knowledge of it.
Not what I figured.
Yeah.
It's a big one. Well, we'll pay half of that. And
yeah. That's fine. It's a problem that not only faces our village, but really everyone. I mean, it's not only a village-wide, county-wide, or state-wide. It's a national issue. And just as we have, either through groups, talk to other intended meetings and other preservation commissions and talk to them about some of their ideas. Certainly when we were looking at the ordinance revisions, perhaps we could request that in the next meeting of regional governmental officials, that the village president kind of bring up this concept and brainstorm or solicit suggestions as to how enforcement can be more effective in that area, because it's something that I can't believe any community is happy with what occurs. And I would think that some kind of concerted regional effort would perhaps have more impact than one community alone. Because then someone, could say, well, what you're doing is you're just penalizing people locally, and that's gonna have an impact.
But you're talking
on
about
our market.
The handling of the Oreo property.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In terms of, enforcement of maintenance and all the kinds of issues that result from the property reaching an Oreo status.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it certainly, obviously, your background and understanding of those things is helpful to know in those regards. I do understand the concept of it, like you presented during the hearing of it falling to the corner of somebody's desk.
Exactly.
I do understand that. So
it's quite literally what happens.
Sure.
The officials who are employed by the applicable lender are as human as we all are, and we all do things. We're all most efficient and most attentive to those things that are in quote unquote our wheelhouse.
Sure.
And those things that require a deeper dive, or perhaps, forging of a new path internally, in this case within the lender's apparatus, to figure out how something gets maintained. Because after all, deteriorating asset, the loan's been written off, but you know what? You can actually get something for it, but if you don't maintain it, it's gonna just drop and drop and drop and drop.
Yeah.
And that's something that, everybody's human. If they don't deal with it all the time, it's like, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, and obviously the village deals with other properties like this, that aren't historically significant.
Oh, to be sure.
Carla mentioned a couple, so you're right, it's not a single issue here. It's not a single issue anywhere. So,
In my comment is not only saying, "Hey, let's protect the significance," and let's go to hell in a handbasket.
That's a good point.
It's more in the nature of it's just something that we ought to just be aware of,
mm-hmm.
in terms of general. Because if you're living next to something which has been poorly maintained, it's going to drag down your property values.
Yeah.
Boo Radley's house. Boo Radley's house.
Dave, I'll be happy to reach out to the Oak Park Area Association of Realtors, but and their focus and membership is mostly Oak Park, River Forest, mm-hmm. and Forest Park.
Yep.
And as you mentioned, regional issue, it may very well be that some things that are working in Forest Park or Oak Park, we could maybe import and exchange and from them, just as they could school off what works
sure.
best for us. So, and also, I think to get them involved, they don't want to probably just hear from me about River Forest, but the membership is a little more excited if they realize, wait a minute, I could have a listing in Oak Park or Forest Park that applies. So that may be a good way for me to get them a little motivated.
Sure, and if it makes sense, after you've had that conversation, you know, reach out to preservation officials or village officials in Oak Park and Forest Park. I'm happy to do that. Mm-hmm. I would think that I don't know much about Forest Park's ordinance. I remember reading it briefly at the time we considered some revisions to our ordinance, but I do know that Oak Park's ordinance is far more restrictive. So, okay.
In the spirit of Oak Park, which is sometimes not always exactly the way River Forest does things. Okay.
Any other thoughts in that regard?
Yeah, I do want to have some good news on two properties. 714 Williams sold, closed. And the address is, I think, 912, or is it 916 Ashland? The big corner house, that closed and sold and closed. 344 Keystone, the blocky house, that is contingent.
Oh, really?
Good.
Mm-hmm. And the women's club is contingent. Yeah. Both have come down.
Big price slash there.
Big price drops.
Yeah.
But
I watch on realtor.com sometimes, which of course is open to the public. And
yeah.
So whether you're looking up recently sold or for sale, mm-hmm. and you can see tax history and when there's
yeah.
price drops or even increases,
yeah.
it shows.
You know anything more about the potential buyers of these properties, Carla? Are there any plans?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Just the status right now.
Good.
So keep my fingers crossed that both of those go through.
What's the 201 Thatcher, John? Did that come before us? Is that something that there's a because the permits here? It's an addition, a new attached garage. Is the permit issued this year?
Didn't come before us.
Was it out of sight of the public way?
Sure, I'm not
on the second page of the list of permits.
No, and that one wouldn't have because it's not a significant property. It's just in the historic district. So that second column specifies that. So it wouldn't be on the list.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think really the only things that have come up recently is I think you guys did a couple sets of windows. I don't remember the addresses off the top of my head, but. Like pretty simple stuff for the most part.
Sure.
And then if I could real quick just mention that in May, for the May meeting, I'll bring the application, if you will, for our annual award, mm-hmm. and we'll mm-hmm. issue that. We usually do that in May,
sure.
around Memorial Day. So be thinking if there's people to nominate, you know, for those of you that might not remember, we did not have an award. We did issue an award last year,
mm-hmm.
But you know, typically the applications are submitted by invitation. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we open it up to anybody. But if you guys think of anybody that we'd like to invite to apply, I'd be happy to send those out as well. So,
okay. One of the other pieces of village news is it now being 7:32. The ZBA hearing has started in our normal meeting room, and at that. A owner applicant is requesting a variance for side yard.
So it's technically secondary frontage.
Okay.
Because it's a corner lot. Would normally be.
It's a southeast corner of William and
Chicago.
To put up a two-story addition.
That's our 700 block of.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's a brick home.
755, and it's a. I mean, again, candidly. It's an addition off the back, which is something that's common on that block. Her just unique situation is that she, under code by right, can't continue what would be the north wall back because the north wall as it is here is non-conforming, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So that's what...
Is that her official to continue that line on back?
So
it's the variation she's applied for, yeah.
Depending on what the ZBA does, that may also come before us as well.
It would, yeah. It, eventually, if she makes some type of change, it will come before us. And David asked about that. Part of the reason, not that she couldn't come here first, that's sort of dealer's choice, if you will, but the HPC's process doesn't have, like, variation procedure. In other words, if she had to go to the ZBA after and something changed, she'd come back through you guys, right? So it probably makes the most sense for her to come here because the ZBA isn't going to comment on the appearance. They're going to say, here's where you can or can't build to, and then the appearance piece would be with you guys here.
But boy, if we could, if you reverse that, or we could chime in early and say, this is a great solution, even though it's preserving parts of the house that we want to preserve. We're all in favor of this. People are voicing their favor. Nice to get a working. That we work that in some up to the proceedings. So.
It's kind of a chicken and the egg kind of thing. I mean, there are reasons to suggest both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the ZBA process is more time consuming for the applicant.
It also could lead to though, guys, where we. If there was some kind of incentive process that we could offer, hey, we can help you with zoning because you're preserving a facade and doing this to an historic home, but it would be nice if we had, if the ZBA would consider us as an ally in that regard.
Well, what I can tell you is that regardless of the way the ZBA votes up or down, variances then go to the board, right? So this application will... definitely move forward to the village board, and it'll either carry a positive or negative recommendation from the ZBA for conditions X, Y, and Z as it relates to that setback. So, if you wanted to be involved in the process, that might be an opportunity to do that.
I'm just thinking, as we try to incentivize preservation rather than demolition, that's a nice thing to have in our pocket. Maybe we can help you.
Sure. You so often come up with solutions to those kind of problems.
It'd be nice to get it, but any architect could. It'd be nice to give them that option. Hey, guys, we preserve this house. We can do this, this, and this, and our setbacks get a little less, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know how that works into everything, but it's beyond my ken.
Yeah.
Any other business other than the setting of the next meeting?
A regular date would be then the 23rd.
Yeah, I don't think I'm around for that.
Sure. So, I mean, we're here on the 11th. Maybe I'll send out availability for the 16th.
Okay.
Maybe the 9th and the 16th.
Yeah.
Because that's, I'll see what people say then. Send that around.
Do we have a vacancy now on our...
Yeah, we do. There are a couple of applications in the hopper, if you will. So the way that works is, you guys probably know, you all applied to be on the commission at one point or another, but applications are always open, vacancy or not. We take them on a rolling basis, and then when vacancies occur, the village president usually contacts and appoints somebody off that list. And given the fact that... that cycle's coming up, I would expect that to happen probably second meeting in May, so, for the village board.
While I'm thinking of things, I just remember, for those of you, and I think Owen's the only one that hasn't had this glorious opportunity yet, you get to fill out the statement of economic non-interest for the Cook County Ethics Commission. It'll take you all of 4 minutes.
I think I did that about 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
But
there you go.
Yeah,
you
okay.
There you
yeah.
go.
And I did the FOIA.
You have to do it every year.
You do it annually.
You do. And it's actually, it's for the year prior. So you fill out, you filled out yours now.
I sent John a note on that because I wanted to be sure it was legit. Because I first got the notice from the county, not from the village.
So this is probably your first one, yeah.
And I did the FOIA.
The
first
Open Meetings Act. Yeah.
Open Meeting Act.
Mm-hmm. No double secret probation for you.
Yeah, okay.
Alrighty. You're proud of me for understanding that reference, Dave.
You know, that's there are those of us who remember seeing that in grad school / professional school.
Animal House.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. Dean Murmer.
Yeah. I work through movies that are recommended by staff here. So if you ever have any recommendations, I try to educate myself.
That's to the extent that I need a refresher in more current music than I would typically listen to, or movies. I know to who to direct my questions.
There you go.
Okay. Any other business? Then do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you all.
Thank you.